and it's usually quite loud.
Happy Family Day and welcome to Finding Your Way Home. I'm delighted today to be in the studio, and I did lots of advertisement and was really excited to share with everyone that I would be having my business partner on air with me this morning. However, in true realtor life fashion, you have to be ready to pivot on a moment's notice, and the day is never exactly as you expect it to be. So unfortunately, Rob Francis was going to be joining me today, and he's had a family emergency. So he's not able to make it, but I do promise you that we will have him on in the future. He is a military move expert, and he wants to give some great insights into our community, particularly because we are a military community, about how to manage those military moves. But unfortunately, we're going to put that off for a couple of weeks until he's able to join us live and in studio. At any rate, you also, as a realtor, always have to have a backup plan, and I always have with me a special guest, which I'm going to bring into studio with me today. So not only my partner in business, but my partner in life, Terry Doherty, is also going to join us in honor of Family Day. And he's going to talk to us all about what it is like to be married to a realtor as part of the realtor family. And we have lots of great stories, and he is obviously my best friend and my soulmate, and he is my ride or die. He is my safety buddy. He is my road trip buddy, and we have a ton of fun just in the way that he supports me in this business. So in about 10 minutes or so, I'm going to bring him on live on the mic, and we're going to chat with him a little bit about being part of a realtor family. I wanted to start though this morning because we have some fresh new statistics right off the hop about what has happened in January, and this is indicative of the start of the real estate year in our area. So again, I thought I would start with the very large Korea area, which is Kingston and Area Real Estate Association. So all home types, all styles in all areas. In the month of January, there were 121 sales. That's not a great number, but I am going to dig a little bit deeper into them because they are skewed a little bit by some really wide ranges. So remember, these are just averages, and I want to make sure that we're all aware of the numbers that we're starting to understand. There were 120 units sold, and this was down 19.9% from January 2025. So let's call that 20% since last January. And it's actually down 22% since December. So not a positive swing, but like I said, there are definitely indicators that are dragging those numbers down. And to be completely honest, and I know I've mentioned it before, we are firmly in a buyer's market right now. So the market is slow. If you're looking to purchase a home, now is a great time. And I'm particularly going to tell you what town it is a great town in as I get a little deeper into the numbers. So the average home price of this data set in the larger Kingston area for January was $563,585, and that was down 6.4% from January 2025 and down 7% over December. There were 380 new listings. Again, that's down 7% over January 2025, and it's actually up 117% since December. We did get a lot of people who went on the market early in the year. I had some great success actually with that. I had one particular unit that we were planning to not list until the spring, and we decided that we were going to go ahead and get started early, anticipating a slow market, which didn't happen because I sold that home actually in 2 weeks. So my sellers and I were all quite pleased. There's currently 783 active listings in our area, which is only down about 3% over what was available in January 2025 and up 2.5% over December. And the current average days on market is 55. And we dug pretty deep into that on the last episode. All that to say, long gone are the days of that number being 7 during the pandemic. So then zooming right down into Kingston, there were 81 sales in Kingston in January 2026. And that was just down 1% over January 2025. So again, that was a big number that we spoke about in the larger Kingston area. But when you're looking at Kingston specifically, it's just actually down 1%, and it's down 11% over December. Not completely unusual because January is typically a slower sales time. The average home price in Kingston is $580,491. So that's higher than the average of the greater Kingston area. But once you're out in some of the peripheral areas and communities, the prices are a little bit lower. So remember, the average home price for the larger area was $563, but in Kingston, it's a little bit more expensive at $580. There were 206 new listings, and that was down 4.5% over January 2025 and up 102% over last month. There's currently 391 listings, and that's down 3% over January 2025 and up 3.5% over last month. And the average days on market in Kingston is 58, so a little bit higher than the average over the larger area as well. Again, they're a little bit more expensive, and people are just having the opportunity to take their time and have choice. What I really wanted to share with everyone that I found to be the most interesting statistic was what's happening in Gananoque. So in Gananoque in January, there were zero sales. There was no sales in January, which unfortunately is the case, particularly if you're trying to sell something in Gananoque. However, my tip for you today is if you're looking to purchase a home and you would consider Gananoque, which is actually a lovely little town, it is absolutely a great time for buyers because those homes that are on the market have most likely been there a while. They are motivated to sell, and it is absolutely a buyer's market when nothing sold in January. There were also, in addition to the no sales, 12 new listings, and those came on the market full well knowing, if they're working with good realtor and a good realtor data set, that it's not a very active and it's not going to be a quick sale for them. They came on the market anyway, so they are most likely motivated. So I love Gananoque. It's a beautiful little town. It has a beautiful playhouse. We're big supporters of the Thousand Islands Playhouse out there. There's a ton of lovely little restaurants. There's some fabulous waterfront condominiums, which I also often look at and drool over and think that would be a lovely little quiet place to live. And you could look at your boat and you could go for walks and get ice cream. You can go to the Purple House, which is a lovely restaurant out there. And it's just a quaint little town. And you're literally only about 10 or 15 minutes into the east side of Kingston, which actually would make this a great option for some of the military people moving in. The ones that don't want to live on base, they could absolutely consider Gananoque. It is a great option. And if you're looking to purchase, it might be something you want to open your mind to. So those are the initial statistics that I wanted to share with everybody. And I think as they come available on a monthly basis, that will be a regular segment in the conversation here. And as I mentioned, we're going to be bringing on regular guests. I already have a mortgage agent queued up. I also have a local lawyer already queued up. And so those are scheduled. And we were going to have, as I said, Rob Francis join us today, but unfortunately he wasn't able. But my favorite person in the world is actually with me. So I wanted to welcome my husband and, like I said, my partner in life and in business, Terry Doherty. And he's going to chat with us a little bit about what it's like to be married to a realtor. Welcome, Terry.
Hey, good morning. And thank you for having me on the show. I'm glad I showed up today.
Well, I said, are you coming with me? It is family day. So yeah. Technically we're all off of work days. And as you know, as a realtor, there are no off of work days.
I was going to say, you have an off work day?
No, I don't.
Yeah, no.
But you also have a professional career and you're supposed to not be working, and I'm using air quotes today, but yeah. I invited you to come because, first of all, we all have fun every time we get together with Rob, so I knew you'd enjoy that and you'd had the opportunity. Terry's also someone who's very familiar and very comfortable on the mic, and he's very familiar and comfortable with this radio station. He's actually better at managing the board than I am, so I do like him as a safety net.
Come on.
Well, I think there was one time when I was a little too quiet when I was trying to fly solo.
That's all right.
So I do like him to join me. So he has, we have a radio show of our own actually Thursdays at 4 o'clock called 30 Years of Nonsense, and that is just more of our silliness and banter and our love of music. And he also has a radio show midnights on Friday night, which is called Into the Darkness, and he loves to play some alternative throwback music. So you're very comfortable.
Yeah, absolutely. But I'm really fascinated, I gotta be honest, with these numbers that you pushed out or were telling me about. So 121 units sold in the greater Kingston area. What does that encompass? Can you answer that? Because, yeah. I mean, I think I know, but I'm not sure.
Okay. So remember, 2 weeks ago, I think we did the boundary of what Kingston and area is. So the Kingston and area Greater Real Estate Association pretty much goes Well, it's Kingston for sure, and then north pretty much up to Highway 7, part of Lenox and, or most of Lenox and Addington, and then leads in Grenville. So as far as Belleville, as far as Brockville, up north, kind of like Highway 7, Charbot Lake.
Does that cover Belleville and Brockville then? Or does it just touch the boundaries to this each side?
We service those areas. And there was kind of a merging of real estate boards a couple of years ago. So the lines are a little bit blurred. But this doesn't pull specifically Brockville houses or Belleville houses.
Yeah, that's crazy. I mean, that seems like a really low number to me.
Yeah, well, it's January. So
well,
that's not
I get it. But I mean, like, how many agents are there just in Kingston?
In the Kingston and Area Real Estate Board,
yeah,
it's just over 600. However, I'm sure you've heard me say this because
oh, yeah,
all the things that I say, you've heard me say 1,000 times.
Yeah.
But there are just over 600 licensed realtors in the CREA board. I would say 50% are inactive or part-time.
Mm-hmm.
And of the other 50%, the 80-20 rule applies. So 20% of the agents are doing 80% of the business. And so you've probably got, I can't do that math off the top of my head, but of that, think about 20% of the then 300 doing the majority of the business.
Yeah, okay. Well, that makes a little more sense then. It's just...
Well, that's not a lot each. That's
no,
not one each
I know,
for a realtor.
I know. That's what I was... I was saying, obviously, there's some people that are really just doing well or are out there... You know, I guess people take it off in January, right? Like,
there's a lot of realtors on vacation. Yes, I've been drooling over seeing some of my realtor friends
yeah,
on beaches and cruises and things like that. But yes, it is a time for realtors to take vacation. And honestly, there were a lot of people who left the industry last year just because it wasn't the greatest real estate market for a lot of people. And remember, this is a 100% commission job. So if you don't sell anything, you don't make any money. And that's a really hard way to support your family. So there has been a lot of people exit the industry as well. The people who are still in the industry, they are troopers, they are tough, and they are people that you should work with.
Can you tell me when the spring market starts?
I thought I was interviewing you.
Oh, no, I want to interview you. This is like our 30 years of nonsense show. I'm pivoting. What about, can you tell me when the spring market starts? When does it really start?
I am projecting we're going to have a really big pickup after the March break. That's what I have experienced, and
okay,
the March break is soon, like middle of March.
Yeah.
We don't have children in school anymore, so I don't remember the exact dates, but I know that the military members are already getting their posting notices, and
okay,
I'll leave that to Rob to talk
yeah,
about, but those people who are leaving Kingston know. I actually have a house coming on the market for an adorable young couple who have been posted to Germany for 2 years.
Yeah.
So I'm going to be putting their house up on the market very soon. We already did our pre-inspection and we're scheduled for photography and cleaning to get them all ready. So they know they're leaving, and anybody in the military who is leaving Kingston knows, so they're starting to make their plans. And anybody from elsewhere who has gotten their notice and is coming to Kingston is most likely planning a house hunting trip soon. And that'll be very busy the end of March, beginning of April.
Okay.
And then we have the natural spring market. I mean, that's just focused on the military.
Yeah.
But honestly, they usually say the first time you see a bloom come out of the ground and there's actually a sunny day, people think,
oh, it's
you know,
crazy.
I wanna
open houses go nuts.
Oh, open houses are great. We've done some fantastic open houses. I so appreciate. Number one, I am going to share with people the honest pros and cons of being in real estate. And my number one concern being in real estate is safety. I'm a female. I predominantly work alone in real estate, but being the good husband that you are, you never let me do open houses by myself.
No.
Because you yeah, shouldn't sit in sometimes a vacant house by yourself and invite strangers into it. That's everything your mother ever told you not to do. And so it is something you got to be careful about. But we have lots of fun at them. You're just a great personality as it is. People just love you. And, you know, if it's not busy, then you're a great someone for keeping me busy. And we have fun together. But we've had some great stories of times when, well, honestly, no one's shown up. Those aren't the greatest ones. But then we've also had ones where there's been people lined up at the door and
yeah,
we're kind of managing traffic. And
yeah,
I'm grateful to have you there.
I feel like I'm a red light, stoplight kind of guy just going, hey, no, you can talk to her in a minute.
Well,
go see this. It gets really busy sometimes.
It does. But there's also, honestly, there was one place that we were showing houses and we knew that there were particular people that the owners didn't want in the home. And that if they approached to come into the open house, that we were told to tell them no. And I want you to do that. for me.
Absolutely.
Which is, so it's also great because I either have you with me or I also have Rob with me. And Rob is also fantastic because he's military trained. I feel so safe with him. It's funny, one time, I know that I'm pivoting a little bit, but one time Rob and I went up to look at a home and we ended up for some reason at the wrong home. It was one of those rural properties that weren't properly numbered. And we were sitting waiting, hoping the lady was going to open the door, which she didn't. And then this really terrible, scary-looking dog came approaching us. And I was looking at Rob, who I could see was completely looking around. And we joked about it afterwards when we got in the car. And he said, Sherry, I have no doubt. I don't know if you noticed, on the left-hand side, there was a shovel. And he is so well trained that if anything happened,
I remember the story.
You do remember, but you're also the same way. You're also very aware of our surroundings at all times.
Yeah, I sit in a specific seat in a table when we go into a restaurant for that reason.
Absolutely. So I'm going to ask you questions though.
Okay, but hang on. Let me just kind of go through your numbers that you started with, right? So you had 121 houses in Greater Kingston, 81 in Kingston. So now we're down to 40. You had none sold in Gananoque and 9 sold in Napanee. So now you're left with 31 houses in the Greater Kingston area.
Which is sold in January. It's going to include South Frontenac and North Frontenac. And all the peripheral areas, like it could be, like we live in Bath, right? So there's all those other places that are going to fill that in.
That seems like a really,
you get really exposure to some really interesting information by hanging it around with me.
Yeah, it's really interesting.
So what do you observe about one of the most interesting things that you think I do or things that I talk about on a regular basis?
So you are really client-oriented, and it sounds like I'm just ringing your bell, but it's true. So every night at 8 o'clock, you send your clients a report on the daily activity on their house, what you've done for them, people that have come to see it. And that's every day. I mean, and
well, that's a little family nuance because I have an alarm that goes off on my phone so I don't forget.
Yeah, but I do it. You do it. And it's fantastic. And I mean, it, even if it's to say, hey, nothing happened today, it keeps people, you know, aware. And I know that we become friends with some of the people that you sell houses for and they go, hey, listen. And if they're right with us around 8 o'clock, they're like, oh, it's the 8 o'clock report.
Right.
I miss that. I looked forward to that. So it's kind of neat. I mean, I think that's a fantastic thing that you do. But that means that you're still on it at 8 o'clock at night, every night.
Yeah, I'm pretty much, well, I always say, particularly as a realtor, if you're awake, you're working. Literally, if I'm awake, I'm working. I am up and at 5 a.m. That's personal choice because you know that we're both members of the 5 a.m. club and we love morning. It's the best time of the day to get a head start 100%. On a wonderful day. And nothing good happens after midnight, but that's another motto for another day that we live by.
Except into the darkness. Right. It happens. It's good until 2 a.m. on
your
Fridays.
Your radio show, that Saturday does works. Happen. You're correct. But I am up. I'm usually at my laptop by 7 a.m. So I do take a little bit of personal time for a morning routine between 5 and 7. But I'm at my laptop by 7. And unless I'm in the middle of a deal, I don't put my phone away until after the 8 o'clock report.
Oh, I know. It's crazy. I know. And then you can be doing a deal till like all hours. It's crazy. Like well, people that have these sign backs at 10:30 at night.
I try really hard to not have those because I am such a baby for my sleep. So often it'll come into, you know, we're getting into the evening and we're doing a sign back and I'll say, the other realtor will say, well, let's make it to 11 p.m. And I'm like, how about 11 a.m. tomorrow? Nothing else is going to happen unless we're competing and we're not in that time when we're competing as much anymore as we were during the pandemic. Unless we're competing, you have to be super aggressive. Otherwise, I'm like, why don't we just pick this back up in the morning and let everybody sleep on it?
And it's funny because some of your clients are actually overseas or out of country, and you've got to get in touch with them as well. So I find it really interesting, just the whole real estate, how realtors work. You guys are literally, I feel like you have 15 balls in the air and you're juggling.
I do.
And you're typing on the computer while juggling and trying to keep your life together. It's crazy. 100%. It really is.
Well, you guys are just always on me about how many tabs I have open on my laptop.
Oh, you're 10. So funny little story. We went to Saskatchewan last week and Sherry has this heated coat because she thinks, you know, it's going to be minus whatever, a million. And it was actually like plus 8, 10. Yeah. And her stuff gets stopped at the while we're going through security. And she goes, oh, it must be my jacket. And the lady pulls out her laptop. She's like, this thing is so hot. And I'm like, yeah, because it's the 55 tabs you
have
open.
I know, because I don't close the tabs.
And it never turns off.
I know.
So it's crazy. But yeah, yeah. I mean, you're working nonstop. And that's great. I love it. It's great for your clients. We're in a part in our life now where we both work a lot and we both enjoy it. And
it doesn't feel like work, to be honest, when you love it.
No, absolutely. I get up every day and I love my job.
I know. We both do. Absolutely. It's fun. What is the thing I would say that you hear me say the most often to people that we or you didn't know before we were actually in the real estate world?
Let me think. What do you say about, it's not done until it's signed on the paper. Like people
sometimes
say,
then it's not even done.
But people will be like, oh, I'm bringing you an offer. And I go, oh, did that offer come in? You're like, nope, ghosted me. Didn't hear a thing.
Well, it's funny. So it's interesting because that is a great point because someone will say, I'm bringing you an offer. And honestly, in the beginning, I would immediately tell my client, oh, I'm so excited. We're going to get an offer. Another agent told me we were getting an offer. And then you get your client seller excited. And then sometimes it never happens. So I actually don't tell my clients anymore until I have it in hand.
An offer in hand. Yeah. Yep. You're like, an offer in hand is a true offer. Other than that, it's just talk.
Right.
People and I've heard people say.
Well, and people are posturing or people change their mind or.
Or tell me if somebody else brings you an offer, then we'll bring you an offer. Well, what are you waiting on? If you want the place, don't you want the place?
Well, I would also, if I wanted the place, then I would make the offer first so that I didn't end up in a competing situation. But people are funny and people behave in an interesting way.
Yeah. So that's, to me, that's a little strange. I mean, I had no idea that this, there's a lot of nuances behind it and there's a lot of forms and paperwork.
Yeah.
I would love to be a realtor, but there's way too much paperwork.
No, he would make me do his paperwork.
Yeah, it's crazy.
Which isn't the worst thing.
No.
I mean, one day we're going to have a deal administrator.
Sure.
And so they do the paperwork.
Yeah, but it's really interesting, but I just... You're also on call 24/7. So you have clients that are coming in from out of town and they're like, hey, we need to see it today, tonight, whatever. And you've got to switch your plans up. Like you've got to be super flexible.
Well, that's what I was going to say. You have to be super flexible because I do have a daily recipe for success plan for my day. So all the tasks and activities that I need to do to feel like I had a successful and productive day. And I wake up in the morning and I think this is what I'm going to do. And these are the projects I'm going to work on. And these are the leads that I'm going to pursue. And then someone at any given time can call and say, please come see my house because I might want to put it up for sale or I want to go look at a house and you go. And so you have to definitely be able to pivot and you have to be flexible. You can't be stuck in, nope, that wasn't what I planned for today. I can't do it because I know I do say this a lot, but this is the largest financial transaction in someone's lifetime that they're going to make. It is the most important thing to them. So it has to be the most important thing to me as well.
Well, the other thing is I also find that you don't discriminate against like whether it's a $300,000 house or a $3 million house.
No.
You treat everybody equally. And I love that. And I got to say that I would think that that's the same way for most realtors, right? Like they give it their all.
Yeah.
And it's
like they're just numbers on a page at the end of the day. I do the process the same for everybody and everybody gets the same service level and the same bells and whistles, regardless of what those numbers on the paper are at the end of the day.
Yeah, I think that's fantastic as well.
People are people. We're all humans and we all deserve, it's their largest asset, whether or not their largest asset is 300,000 or 3 million, it's still theirs. It's the largest one they have.
Yeah, and you're the same way rentals as well. Like I see you that, you know, you spend a lot of time.
I love a rental.
Yeah.
It's fun.
Taking people around and showing rentals. And I always find it interesting when people, or there's somebody already in the property and you're going to show a property and you're like, you knew we were coming.
Right.
And there's stuff everywhere. I'm like, there's dishes, there's stuff like
that's
on their weekend.
Conversation for another day about how people should prepare for showings.
Oh, it's crazy. I'm like, you knew we were coming and it depends on who's living
in the house, right?
But I like when I go to the front door and I'm like, hey, I guess I'll pick a pair of shoes because but I'm just saying there's like, it's crazy the amount of, you know, it's just interesting to see different things.
Some you go in and they're magazine worthy staged.
Oh my gosh.
And they're pristine.
Yeah.
And in my opinion, there's actually a happy balance between those two things because to me, when it looks so staged that it looks like you walked into a hotel lobby, I don't feel like I could be comfortable there and get under my blanket and kick off my shoes. And it doesn't feel like home because it's too perfect. Versus, you know, somebody who didn't even pick up a wet towel off the bed, then you also think, well, this isn't a clean house. Or I want to move in and put my life in. So there is a happy balance. Absolutely.
Yeah, I don't know. I find real estate, every time I go out with you, I find something new and something interesting that's, you know, we have something to chat about on the way home.
Oh, yeah. Usually. It's always fun.
Yeah.
And you're honestly a great life partner, but great person to be with as it relates to this because you get invested in people.
Yeah.
So you're like, oh, that little couple, did they get the house? And did they talk to their dad about the plumbing? And did they get pre-approved? And it's so fun because I like seeing you get excited because then when we take them their housewarming gift, they're half the time as excited to see you as they are me. So
yeah, I got to be honest, my favorite is the first home time buyers, or if they said whatever, I'm not sure if that's called.
First time home buyers.
Yeah. So I like those people the best. And not that I don't like others, but it's just, it's really interesting to see them because they're so excited and, you know, they've got these plans and you can see them literally putting items in their head. In places in their furniture, right?
Well,
they're placing stuff.
I've always said it's a hot buyer's cue when people start placing their furniture.
Oh, yeah, 100%. And I enjoy watching that. Or they'll be like, hey, we're going to put the hutch here. And then then the husband will be like, we need a bigger TV now. Yeah. And I'm like, yeah, you do.
He's always speaking your language.
I'm always big about TV, barbecues, patios. I love when they're like asking me questions. I'm like, yeah, I'd put this here and that there. Jerry's like, stop.
Oh, you can help them place their furniture.
I can't answer
real estate questions.
No, but I can help you pick and buy new furniture as well. So I could be your
you're very good at that, yeah.
Purchase guy.
Absolutely, yes.
So, yeah, no, I in all honesty, I love this, that you're doing this, and I think it's great. And
the only thing that I ever worry about is I do feel that I've become less reliable than I used to be. And I am reliable. I'm saying that in a negative way, but it's not so negative. But I used to be very, you know, we said Tuesday night dinner at 6:00. And now maybe sometimes I have to say, can we push it to 7:00?
Because honestly, it's actually 8:10 because she's got her 8:00 report.
That's
at 8:00.
True. But honestly, like you do have to give it that urgency because, again, we talked about like this is business. And if I'm not available to take somebody to see a house, they'll just call another agent. And given there's 600, there's lots of choice. So it's an honor when they call you.
Absolutely.
So you have to have that. But if you had a partner that wasn't as flexible or understanding or supportive, then that would be difficult.
Well, you also put up with my 30 years of nonsense.
I have, so. Actually. Yes, that was a nice segue. It's not 30 years of nonsense time.
No, but honestly, I mean, I'm usually late or whatever. There's something going on, but I try and not be late because you are very, hey, I've got to get there
15 minutes before
for
them.
A client. Mm-hmm. Yeah. So I can have the lockbox open or whatever we're doing. It's mm-hmm. always, I've got to beat the client there. So.
Oh, you can never have a client waiting for you.
Yeah,
absolutely. That's a terrible thing.
Yeah.
Absolutely. Okay. I'm going to wrap it up. We have just about a minute more. So I wanted to mention that there's just a couple of things. I actually had a whole nother segment that I wanted to talk about, which was pieces of advice for first-time home buyers. So we'll just touch on, say, 3, because we have 60 seconds left. The couple of things that I would mention, and I'm sure I did mention this previously, is to make sure that you visit with your lender. So whether or not that's your bank or your mortgage agent, please start the process early and get yourself pre-approved before you fall in love with a home. Please also be willing to open your mind. So you might have an expectation of what your first home is going to look like, and that might not just be within reach, but getting into home ownership is a very valuable financial strategy for a lot of people. And I know we're going to spend time on this show talking about the people who choose not to go that path, and that is completely okay. But if you are taking that path, then those are things you need to consider that maybe, you know, you didn't think that, you know, Amherst View was for you or Gananoque was for you. But when you go out there, you see some really fantastic options out that way. So that's something you need to keep your mind open. But also not that you're going to completely drain every penny you have, because there will always be unanticipated household expenses and you should always have a slush fund available for those. More to follow. I do wish everyone a very happy family day and thank you to Terry for being with me as always by my side. And I hope
thanks for having me.
Of course, at any time. Enjoy the sunny family day, everyone.
It's usually around midnight, or you do try to do some serious writing. Was I bothering you when I turned that corner? Asked the woman. No. But you put yourself in contact with me, said the woman. If you think that that contact is not going to last a while, you got another thought coming. When I get through with you, sir, you are going to remember Mrs. Luella Bates Washington Jones. I have done things, too, which I would not tell you, son. Neither tell God if he didn't already know.
Welcome to This Way Out, the international LGBTQ radio magazine. I'm Brian DeShazer. Uganda drops its first Kill the Gays case after destroying the defendant. New research debunks an advantage for trans female athletes. And Langston Hughes reads a story of Black family values. Those stories and more this week because you've chosen This Way Out.
I'm Michael Taylor Gray.
And I'm Tanya Kane Perry.
With NewsWrap, a summary of some of the news in or affecting LGBTQ communities around the world for the week ending February 7th, 2026. The first case against a gay man for violating Uganda's so-called Kill the Gays law is dismissed, but the damage has already been done. The defendant's lawyer proved to the court that his client's lengthy detention has caused serious mental illnesses, including schizophrenia. He spent close to a year in prison as his case moved through the East African nation's legal system. Attorney Douglas Mawadri told Agence France-Presse that the judge found his client to be too mentally unstable to understand the trial process. The unnamed defendant is now 25 years old. The plight of his 41-year-old partner has not been reported. The younger man was accused of unlawful sexual intercourse in 2023, just 3 months after Ugandan President Yoweri Museveni signed the infamous and overwhelmingly popular Anti-Homosexuality Act. The law includes the death penalty for what it calls aggravated homosexuality, including repeated homosexual acts and sex that transmits HIV/AIDS or other potentially terminal illnesses. Same-gender intercourse with a minor, an elderly person, or a person with disabilities also fall into that category. Prosecutors never explained why they had lodged the original aggravated charges in this case. In January of 2024, they were lowered to unnatural offenses of having carnal knowledge against the order of nature, which is punishable by up to life in prison. The judge made sure in his February 3rd ruling that the now mentally incapacitated defendant would not face any charges. Queer advocates like Richard Lesimbo are outraged that the dismissal took almost 2 years. He told Agence France-Presse, "Detaining someone for over a year without trial is injustice at its worst."
Transgender female athletes have no physical advantage over their cisgender counterparts if they've received 1 to 3 years of gender-affirming hormone therapy. This, according to new research published this week in the British Journal of Sports Medicine. 52 different studies conducted at academic and medical institutions in Brazil were considered. More than 2,900 trans women and about 2,300 trans men were involved, along with more than 560 cis women and more than 660 cis men. Most of the studies focused exclusively on adult athletes, but 7 included teens. The author's conclusion is that existing evidence does not support theories of inherent athletic advantages for transgender women over cisgenders. The academics lamented the relative dearth of top-level studies on trans athletes and called for further research. What they know now is that the current data does not justify blanket bans on trans athletes. University of Sao Paulo physician and co-author Bruno Guailano told Spanish-language newspaper El País, "Most of these policies are based on the assumption that transgender women retain inherent physical advantages and would therefore dominate women's competitions. The data does not support this idea."
fewer transgender people were murdered around the world between October 2024 and September 2025. That's the good news. The bad news is that there were still 281 trans or gender diverse homicide victims during that time period, according to the global group Trans Murder Monitoring. Brazil is the worst place on the planet for trans people to live. It's topped the list ever since worldwide monitoring began in 2008. 77 murder victims in 2024-2025 were trans women or female presenting. 3 were trans men. 88% were black or of mixed race. 14% engaged in some form of activism. Those figures were released this week by Brazil's National Association of Transvestites and Transgender People. The group warns, the message could not be clearer. Lethal violence is now compounded by direct persecution of those who organize, mobilize, and expose injustice. The 80 Brazilian victims in 2024-2025 are still an improvement over the two previous years. In 2024, there were 122 murder of trans people reported by the Monitoring Project, and 145 in 2023. A significant number each year were sex workers. The South American country's civil society has tried to stem the tide. Supreme Court rulings have included marriage equality, adoption rights, and the ability of trans people to change their legal name and gender without having to undergo gender-affirming surgery. Homophobia and transphobia are criminal offenses in Brazil as a form of racism. Queer advocates hope those advances have been deterrents.
A Christian teacher is fighting a losing battle against the Montgomery County, Maryland Public School District's policy on using the chosen names and pronouns of her trans and non-binary students. Kimberly Polk is a substitute teacher in the district, and she claimed that being forced to follow the policy violated her constitutional, religious, and First Amendment rights. A 3-judge panel of the Richmond, Virginia-based 4th U.S. Circuit Court of Appeals voted 2-1 on January 28th to support the school district upholding lower court rulings. Judge Robert B. King wrote for the majority, "How a teacher addresses a particular student in a particular classroom and whether a teacher communicates with the student's parents is merely a part of that teacher's job description." Polk's attorney, Rick Claybrook, told the Washington Post that he and his client are considering an appeal to the full Fourth Circuit or to the U.S. Supreme Court.
A record number of proud LGBTQ athletes are competing in the 2026 Winter Olympics in Milan and Cortina, Italy. The queer website Outsports.com counts 44, including Amber Glenn, the first publicly out queer women's figure skater in Winter Olympic history. She's a top U.S. hope for a figure skating medal. Ellis Lundholm of Sweden is the first out transgender competitor in the Winter Games. He'll be flying freestyle downhill on uneven terrain as a moguls skier. Team LGBTQ includes 34 women and 10 men. The 22 out female hockey players make it the runaway queerest Winter Olympic sport. 6 LGBTQ men and 1 woman will be figure skating. Alpine and freestyle skiing boasts 6 queer competitors each. Speed skating has 4, skeleton has 2, and there's 1 each from snowboarding, curling, and biathlon. Outsports.com's initial review finds queer Winter Olympians from at least 13 countries, the UK, the US, Canada, Finland, Sweden, Austria, Belgium, Brazil, France, Germany, Italy, Switzerland, and the Czech Republic. Outsports.com uses a pretty basic methodology. They review social media profiles for dozens of athletes looking for telltale clues about their being LGBTQ, and then contact the leading prospects to verify. You can check Outsports.com for more details about a wide range of competitors and updated stats. The Olympic opening ceremonies were held on February 6th.
Finally, thousands hit the streets of Melbourne on February 1st for the 31st annual Midsummer Pride March. The event's CEO, Karen Bryant, said in a message before the march began, "Though global rifts threaten us, we celebrate with pride in a way that is meaningful for us all." In the words of Victoria's State Commissioner for LGBTQIA+ Communities, Joe Ball, "Firefighters, scouts, nurses, teachers, councils, corporates, health services and schools, every part of our private, public and civil society on motorbikes, using walkers, wheelchairs and prams. We have Christians, Jews, Hindus, Muslims and many people of all different faiths. Every major political party is represented, standing together, united. All of us gathering under shared values of equality, dignity, freedom and safety. And this is how we do it in Victoria." Victorian Premier Jacinta Allen was also there with the biggest Midsummer Pride crowd in years. Her social media message read in part, "Pride is about being able to live your life openly without fear or apology. To anyone who's ever been made to feel different just because of who you will always belong in our Victoria."
That's News Wrap. Global queer news with attitude for the week ending February 7th, 2026. Follow the news in your area and around the world. An informed community is a strong community.
News Wrap is written by Greg Gordon and Lucia Chappelle, produced by Brian DeShazer, and brought to you by you.
Thank you. Help keep us in ears around the world at thiswayout.org, where you can also read the text of this newscast and much more. For This Way Out, I'm Michael Taylor Gray. Stay healthy.
And I'm Tanya Kane Perry. Stay safe.
You're listening to This Way Out, the international LGBTQ radio magazine. Now it's time to rewind the rainbow. This is the Rainbow Rewind,
where we take a quick look back at the people and the moments that made queer history.
I'm Brian DeShazer.
And I'm Sherry Lund.
This week we honor the February birthday of Alice Walker.
"Dear Nettie, I don't write to God no more. I write to you." "What happened to God?" asked Shirk. "Who that?" I say. She look at me serious. "Big a devil as you is," I say, "you're not worried about no God, surely." She said, "Wait a minute. Hold on just a minute here. Just because I don't harass it like some people does no don't mean I ain't got religion." "What God do for me?" I asked. She says, "Silly," like she's shocked. "He gave you life, good health, and a good woman that love you to death."
Alice Walker is an important LGBTQ figure as an openly bisexual author and activist who normalized queer Black love in literature, most notably through the central relationship in her Pulitzer Prize-winning 1982 novel, The Color Purple. She challenged societal norms by depicting lesbian relationships as beautiful, natural, and liberating.
Now let's rewind to a few February key queer milestones. In 2020, Virginia became the first state in the American South to offer legal protections in employment, housing, and public accommodations to LGBTQ people. In 2011, civil unions, a separate and unequal version of gay marriage, are legalized in Hawaii.
A reminder that our history is built on courage, creativity, and community.
That's this week's Rainbow Rewind, because remembering our past fuels our pride. I'm Brian DeShazer.
And I'm Sherry Lund. Stay tuned. More This Way Out is coming up.
Our listeners support This Way Out in many ways.
By subscribing to our e-newsletter.
Email us at info@thiswayout.org.
And through your financial contributions to our program.
More information about how you can give is online at thiswayout.org.
Thank you.
classic by openly closeted composer Billy Strayhorn, who put the swing into the notorious heterosexual Duke Ellington's jazz that lit the Harlem Renaissance of Langston Hughes. Historian Henry Louis Gates Jr. says that the 1920s and 30s era in New York's African-American community was surely as gay as it was black. Hughes apparently eluded the romantic advances of his gay literary peers Elaine Locke and County Cullen, and scholars now speculate that the one-time best friend of possibly by Zora Neale Hurston was asexual. In 1963, the iconic author was the guest of a young reporter named Eve Corey at the studios of WBAI in New York City. We'll hear an excerpt of their conversation, followed by Hughes reading his short story, Thank You, Ma'am.
We kind of got you up this morning or this afternoon. It's 4 o'clock, and you say that you first get up at 4.
Well, I work at night, you see, and so sometimes I don't start writing until 12 or 1 o'clock because there's not much use trying to do anything that requires a great deal of concentration in New York in the daytime or in the early evening. One has usually many interruptions during the day. The phone rings 40 times. Strangers come by, relatives you haven't seen in 10 years.
They just drop in.
Drop in time. And you can't say no. So the result is that when peace and quiet settles down, it's usually around midnight, you see. Then I may try to, or usually do try to do some serious writing.
Hmm. Sort of the quiet time for you. And
yeah.
Then you spend the rest of the day doing what?
I read the mail, and the mail is... Well, maybe sometimes a 2 or 3 hour task if one answers some of the letters immediately.
Mm.
Now that I'm writing for the New York Post, I get quite a deal of fan mail. And
what kind of letters do you get?
On the whole, very cordial and usually nice letters commenting on some aspect with which the writer agrees. But...
I knew there was going to be a but.
There's always a few letters of disagreement and sometimes violent disagreement. And once in a while from people who... are not very pro-civil rights. One gets angry and unsigned letters, you know, Ku Klux Klan type of letters.
Really?
Yes.
Are these postmarked New York or...?
Most of them are. Most of them seem to be Brooklyn.
You live in Harlem yourself.
I live in Harlem, which I like very much. Mm. So Harlem is no longer a place where you have to live if you don't want to, if you're colored. But I happen to like it very much. It's a very lively community, and so I live there. But many of my friends live in Park West Village in the 80s or down in the village or in Brooklyn or in the Bronx, you see. And there is, of course, housing difficulties still for colored peoples, but not anywhere near what they used to be.
Mm-hmm. You originally came from Joplin, Missouri. Did you move directly to Harlem?
Oh, no. I was just born in Joplin. I don't even remember it. I've lived so many places since then.
Well, then you're a native New Yorker, almost.
Well, I've been here more or less off and on for at least 25 years.
You worked as a seaman, and you went to West Africa and Europe. Which sounds quite fascinating, especially the West Africa part.
Yeah, I had a wonderful
today series
of trips and enjoyed them very much. And sometimes I wish I were a seaman again. You get to travel. On freight boats, I've never worked on passenger ships, but on freight boats they go rather leisurely, you know. And they stay in odd ports to which one would not otherwise be likely to visit. Can I read it now?
Yes, sure. Go right ahead.
All right. It's called Thank You, Ma'am. She was a large woman with a large purse that had everything in it but a hammer and nails. It had a long strap, and she carried it slung across her shoulder. It was about 11 o'clock at night, dark, and she was walking alone when a boy ran up behind her and tried to snatch her purse. The strap broke with a single sudden tug that the boy gave it from behind. But the boy's weight and the weight of the purse combined caused him to lose his balance. Instead of taking off full blast as he had hoped, the boy fell on his back on the sidewalk and his legs flew up. The large woman simply turned around and kicked him right square in his blue-jeaned sitter. Then she reached down, picked the boy up by his shirt front, and shook him until his teeth rattled. After that, the woman said, "Pick up my pocketbook, boy, and give it here." She held him tightly, but she bent down enough to permit him to stoop and pick up her purse. Then she said, "Now ain't you ashamed of yourself?" Firmly gripped by his shirt front, the boy said, "Yes'm." The woman said, "What did you want to do it for?" The boy said, "I didn't aim to." She said, "You a lie." By that time, two or three people passed, stopped, turned around on the street to look, and some stood watching. "If I turn you loose, will you run?" asked the woman. "Yes'm," said the boy. "Then I won't turn you loose," said the woman. She did not release him. "Lady, I'm sorry," whispered the boy. "Your face is dirty. I got a great mind to wash your face. Ain't you got nobody home, boy, to tell you to wash your face?" "No'm," said the boy. "Then it will get washed this evening," said the large woman, starting up the street, dragging the frightened boy behind her. He looked as if he were 14 or 15, frail and willow wild, in tennis shoes and blue jeans. The woman said, "You ought to be my son. I would teach you right from wrong. Least I can do right now is to wash your face. Are you hungry?" "No'm," said the being dragged boy. "I just want you to turn me loose." "Was I bothering you when I turned that corner?" asked the woman. "No'm." "But you put yourself in contact with me," said the woman. "If you think that that contact is not going to last a while, you got another thought coming. When I get through with you, sir, you are going to remember Mrs. Luella Bates Washington Jones." Sweat popped out on the boy's face, and he began to struggle. Mrs. Jones stopped, jerked him around in front of her, put a health Nelson around his neck, and continued to drag him up the street. When she got to her door, she dragged the boy inside, down a hall, and into a large kitchenette-furnished room at the rear of the house. She switched on the light and left the door open. The boy could hear other roomers laughing and talking in the large house. Some of their doors were open, too, so he knew that he and the woman were not alone. The woman still had him by the neck in the middle of her room. She said, "What's your name?" "Roger," answered the boy. "Then, Roger, you go to that sink and wash your face," said the woman. Whereupon she turned him loose at last. Roger looked at the door, looked at the woman, looked at the door, and went to the sink. "Let the water run until it gets warm," she said. "Here's a clean towel." "You gonna take me to jail?" asked the boy, bending over the sink. "Not with that face. I would not take you nowhere," said the woman. "Here I am trying to get home to cook me a bite to eat, and you snatch my pocketbook. Maybe you ain't been to your supper either, late as it is. Have you?" "There's nobody home in my house," said the boy. "Then we'll eat," said the woman. "I believe you're hungry, or been hungry, to try to snatch my pocketbook." "I want a pair of blue suede shoes," said the boy. "Well, you didn't have to snatch my pocketbook to get some blue suede shoes," said Mrs. Luella Bates Washington Jones. "You could have asked me." "Ma'am?" The water dripping from his face, the boy looked at her. There was a long pause, a very long pause. After he had dried his face, and not knowing what else to do, dried it again, the boy turned around, wondering what next. The door was open. He could make a dash for it down the hall. He could run, 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 run. The woman was sitting on the daybed. After a while, she said, "I were young once, and I wanted things I could not get." There was another long pause. The boy's mouth opened. Then he frowned, not knowing he frowned. The woman said, "You thought I was going to say but, didn't you? You thought I was going to say, but I didn't snatch people's pocketbooks." "Well, I wasn't going to say that." Pause. Silence. "I have done things, too, which I would not tell you, son. Neither tell God if he didn't already know. Everybody's got something in common. So you sit on a while I go and fix us something to eat. You might run that comb through your hair so you'll look presentable." In another corner of the room, behind a screen, was a gas plate and an ice box. Mrs. Jones got up and went behind the screen. The woman did not watch the boy to see if he was going to run now, nor did she watch her purse, which he left behind her on the daybed. But the boy took care to sit on the far side of the room, away from the purse, where he thought she could easily see him out of the corner of her eye if she wanted to. He did not trust the woman not to trust him, and he did not want to be mistrusted now. "Do you need somebody to go to the store?" asked the boy, "maybe to get some milk or something?" "I don't believe I do," said the woman, "unless you just want sweet milk yourself. I was going to make cocoa out of this canned milk I got here." "That will be fine," said the boy. She heated some lima beans and ham she had in the icebox, made the cocoa, and set the table. The woman did not ask the boy anything about where he lived, or his folks, or anything else that would embarrass him. Instead, as they ate, she told him about her job in a hotel beauty shop that stayed open late at night, what the work was like, and how all kinds of women came in and out, blondes, redheads, and Spanish. Then she cut him a half of her 10-cent cake. "Eat some more, son," she said. When they were finished eating, she got up and said, "Now here, take this $10 and buy yourself some blue suede shoes. And next time, do not make the mistake of latching onto my pocketbook nor nobody else's, because shoes got by devilish ways will burn your feet. I got to get my rest now, but from here on in, son, I hope you will behave yourself." She led him down the hall to the front door and opened it. "Good night. Behave yourself, boy," she said, looking out into the street as he went down the steps. The boy wanted to say something other than "thank you, ma'am," to Mrs. Luella Bates Washington Jones. But although his lips moved, he couldn't even say that as he turned at the foot of the barren stoop and looked up at the large woman in the doorway. Then she shut the door.
You've been listening to Langston Hughes reading his 1958 story, Thank You, Ma'am.
Kelly Strayhorn.
Thanks for discovering This Way Out, brought to you by the nonprofit Overnight Productions. News Wrap was reported this week by Michael Taylor Gray and Tanya Kane Perry, and produced by Brian DeShazer. The Rainbow Rewind was written by Sherry Lund and produced by and co-hosted with Brian DeShazer. Thanks to the Pacifica Radio Archives for the Langston Hughes feature, which was edited by Greg Gordon. Chicago and Duke Ellington and his orchestra featuring Billy Strayhorn performed some of the music you heard, and Kim Wilson composed and performed our theme music. This Way Out thanks David Hunt of Raleigh, North Carolina, Richard Merck and Brad Payton of Silicon Valley celebrating their 50th year together, and all the listener donors who make this program possible. Ask us about how you can join them. Look for This Way Out Radio on social media. Email us at info@thiswayout.org or write to us at P.O. Box 1065, Los Angeles, California, 90078 USA. For coordinating producer Greg Gordon, associate producer Lucia Chappell, and all of us at This Way Out, I'm Brian DeShazer. Thanks for listening online at thiswayout.org or wherever you get your podcasts and on live.